That is one of the main reasons we have tried so hard to achieve space travel outside of gravitational manipulation. If you think about it for a moment, if you started a long trip through space and then projected yourself forward in time to the point where the trip would end, no matter how long it should have taken, you could arrive there almost instantaneously if you wished it so. On the return journey, you could set yourself to arrive back at your home base at whatever time you wished it to be. We like to keep in synchronization with time spent outside this time, space travel. For instance, if this expedition that we are on now to planet Earth took 30 of our days to complete in real time, excluding the time travel aspect, we would prefer to arrive back after those 30 days have gone by on Haven. That keeps us in synchronization with our life cycle at home. That is, we do not age at a different rate to those who remain behind on Haven. So, you see, we can travel anywhere in no time at all, or in only as much time as we choose to take. The catch, he added, is to make sure you do not arrive back before you personally have left. There are two reasons for this. There will be two of you in almost the same place at the same time, and much confusion. We have since found that one of those two people or items, if it is items that have been sent through time, will be catapulted into the past and will occupy that vortex or space that was created back there by these overlaps in future displaced time. Please do not ask me to elaborate on that, this journey is not long enough. But I can add that some visitors to your plane have ended up there without really wanting to, because of the above fact and have had to stay there. Why was it necessary to become dimensionally variant to time travel? I asked. If you remain in a lower order of vibration, such as you would normally be in, he was referring to me personally, you would only find it possible to time travel within your own lifetime, your third dimensional lifetime that is, which will be the only one you can perceive at this time, as I understand it. Beyond that, there are many complications associated with time travel for your kind. For one, you could not interact with or physically touch anything that you saw. It would be an unreal world for you, perhaps similar to the way you perceive a dream, which is one way that you can access the future even now, he explained. Do you mean, then, that we could time travel right now on Earth if we had the technology? I inquired once more. Yes, why not? But what do you mean if you had the technology? For you surely do, Yavati suggested. What do you mean? I inquired. No one on Earth can time travel. We fantasize about it a lot, but no one that I know of has done it yet, I replied, slightly puzzled. Well, then, how is it you say? Someone is pulling the wool over your eyes, was his answer, but he would go no further on the subject. Do you communicate with other alien races? I asked, trying to find some other subject that he felt comfortable in discussing with me. Yes, when we feel it may be appropriate, which is not often, was his reply. Like who, then? I asked, pushing while my luck was still holding. Well, you have some close neighbors. I believe they are interacting with you more frequently than we are, he commented. What do they look like and where do they come from? I asked eagerly. Well, from your mind's eye you already know what they look like. Zetas or Greys, the aliens I had read about in the magazines. They come from, well, shall we say, not too far away, at least the ones that are presently interacting with your people. He would not give much away. How close? The moon? I pushed on. I surprised myself, for I don't know why I should say moon. I had not consciously thought for one moment that there were aliens on our moon. Was I starting to access parts of his mind that he was trying to keep closed to me? Something like that, but no, not that moon. He backed off the subject, almost startled. Did he sense I was getting more information than he intended to give? It was like pulling hen's teeth, anyway. He would not elaborate, no matter how hard I tried to get him to open up. Well, then, why do they come to Earth? I asked. Much the same as us. They perhaps need your understanding as well as help. They have been around for a long time. They are mostly a very gentle race, but they do not really understand you at all. You have changed since they were last there in numbers. In spite of that, there is every chance they may be among you openly, sooner than we will be," was Yavati's most unexpected reply. "May I ask if there are other reasons for your most frequent visits to Earth, other than for breeding purposes?" I inquired hopefully. "Yes, you may. We are at the present time preparing for a major repair and correction that is to take place in your year 1993. It will change a few things, all for the better, you should know. It is of our doing, long ago, that some of these repairs are necessary. It is a payback, if you like. It is for our own good, too, should we be lucky enough ever to share your planet with you," he replied. I didn't have a clue what the repairs might be about, and he would not elaborate yet again. A little voice inside me kept wondering why I had not asked these questions of Xena. I was only just beginning to realize how strong her influence had been over me, now that I was free of it. Somehow I was starting to get the feeling that I was only able to ask the questions she was prepared to answer. There were some strange emotions at work here. To say I was confused would not tell half the story. What are the others, aliens, doing, then, apart from genetics? I asked, trying to keep my mind on the present. Some are also assisting with the repairs, some are doing things with your governments. There is much distrust, mostly from your side, he said. How do you feel about all this? I asked. We try to stay distant. We do not like some of what is going on, but we must not judge. He would say no more on the subject. What if I were to tell my people back home of all this? I suggested. You may tell whom you like. Those who believe, already know. Those who do not, will not. There was no arguing with that logic. What is important to us, Yavati continued, is that you know we are here and who we are. When we call on you to help us, you will know who we are and what we are trying to do. That may just make the difference in the end. I thought that now would be a good time to ask about a tour of the control room. Would it be too much to ask if I could see how you steer this thing? The transporter, I mean. Control center. He thought about it. I will get back to you on that, he added. Well, a maybe was better than a straight no. Yavati excused himself. Later, the maybe did turn into a no. I rested, rehydrated, and then searched for more people to cross, examine, not very successfully, I might add. I had some long talks with Millie, who had been told this would be her last opportunity to see Earth for quite a number of years, so she was going to make the most of it. More likely, I think, she was asked along to keep me company, possibly Xena's idea. We got along very well for two people who were more than a generation apart. Time passed and eventually I was informed that preparations were underway for my transmutation back to a lower density. I would undergo a similar course of events as had happened on my way in 9 days before. But, of course, in reverse order. It was a process that would speed up or slow down my metabolism, I'm not sure which. Just before this took place, I had to consume quite an amount of a very salty liquid, not the best experience of the trip. The total time for this transmutation process was approximately 24 hours. The sequence of events was explained to me beforehand, as it would not be possible to communicate with me once the suit had been removed. What this meant, in fact, was that for just over 24 hours I was to become a golden ghost again. From this point on, things are a little sketchy. I did arrive in Auckland eventually, as you already know from the sequence of events at the beginning of my narration. However, little did I know that my adventure was not yet over, in fact, it was just beginning to warm up. What I had been through was the prelude to, and the reason for, an equally bizarre series of events which were to occur right here on home ground. Extract from Chapter 21. A new understanding of space, time, lightships on the natural interdimensional highways. From what I have been able to decipher, galaxies are not scattered willy-nilly all over the universe as you might imagine. They seem to be linked by threads of energy and arranged in rows which run in many directions. Moreover, not all galaxies are linked together by the same threads of energy. Deep space can be likened to a many-ribboned highway, where these ribbons of energy can be used to navigate the heavens. Some space travelers fire their craft down these highways at fantastic speeds using the natural energy of the universe. The technique is akin to using an optical fiber filament. Indeed, the spaceship becomes no more than a pulse of electricity or light as it utilizes these filaments of pure energy. On this planet, I have heard these types of ships referred to as lightships. I'm not sure whether the people who use these descriptions really know how close they are to a true description of these fantastic vessels. A lightship is a marvel of technology and nature combined. It is an exercise in cybernetics well beyond our understanding. As with their houses, these ships are partially living entities. A few people on this planet have suggested that some types of alien craft are powered by giant crystals. This may be correct for some, but the craft or transporter I was privileged to board was a living crystal-based entity in its own right. Apparently, this is essential for dimensional type travel, as everything that passes through the gate, a black hole, must have natural regenerative abilities. In other words, the body, and whatever else accompanies it, must carry a natural blueprint within it so it may reassemble itself in the proper form after the event or transformation. A crude example of this would be in the way a crystal dissolved in water can always reconstruct itself perfectly once it has dried out of the solution. The human body has regenerative capabilities similar to this and far beyond our imaginings. Perhaps one day we will learn to tap into this phenomenon, but this is an altogether different subject which I won't go into here. It must suffice for us to understand that, as with the ship, the human body must also reassemble itself after one of these transmutations. It just so happens that the pyramidal shape is custom made to accomplish this task. The primary function of a pyramid, whether it be on or off this planet, is to reconstitute matter to a preset form, or, in turn, to transmit it to another pyramidal formation at some other location for reconstitution. The matter transmitted need not be solid, state matter, as might be expected, but may be in the form of sound waves, pictures, as in our own TV transmitters, or in some other as, yet, unidentified form such as fourth, dimensional travel or mind travel. We have only to study the effects of a pyramid on a blunt razor blade, as covered elsewhere in this book, to see that we already have the proof, right before our very eyes. It is not sci-fi, this is real. Because the lightship is a living thing, it has many benefits we can hardly imagine. It can divide itself on demand more than once and then reabsorb those divisions into itself. It can change its shape if need be, and probably its size, too. When this freakish device is used in an atmosphere like our own, I was told it could be made all but invisible as it could bend the sun's rays or any light around it so as not to cast any shadow on the ground or leave any silhouette in the sky. For all that I say, I have not seen a lightship, or any other UFO for that matter, in the sky either by day or night, so what one might look like in flight is anyone's guess. Earth science is far behind what I have witnessed, but it may not be as far behind as you may think. What we are told we can do scientifically and technically is one thing, but what goes on behind closed doors is a different matter altogether. Today's science fiction is tomorrow's reality, but what you see today has been played with for years behind those very same closed doors. The way light and other base elements interact with one great variable in the universe is what helps make what appears to be a solid object. That variable is known to us as magnetism. For all our scientific knowledge today, it is curious that the force of magnetism is one of the least understood. How fitting, perhaps, that this force is the very one that needs to be fully understood before mankind can truly come of age in the cosmos. It is almost as if this last realm of science has been denied us because we are not yet ready for the responsibility that this conquest may bring. For sure, if magnetism is misused, it could have devastating effects on us all, as could well have happened at some earlier period of our history. Light is an excellent conductor. A conductor passed through a magnetic field can, or should, create an electrical field. Now we have three major players working towards the construction of planets, suns, and all that is out there in the sky at night. Magnetic energy can be found in the universe as eddies or swirls in time and space, just as whirlpools or eddies can be found in water. In fact, space is much more like water than we have been led to believe by the experts, for water in its natural, flowing state is also full of energy streams or filaments. Just ask a fish. From other extracts from a book on a contact in Puerto Rico in 1988. I took the main road, road number 2, until I reached the intersection that took me to Labajura. Once I started heading down this sector, I noticed a dense fog on the road, very thick and white. It was nothing out of there, ordinary. I had gone through the same area at around the same time, 4:30 in the morning. I was driving very slowly, paying close attention to the road. My thoughts, at the time, were of possibly encountering an animal on the road and preventing an accident. Also, I thought of the pain in my feet and what I had fixed myself to eat when I got home. All of a sudden I heard a noise, as if someone or something were running close to my car and was trying to catch up and pull right next to me. Everything happened very fast. I heard the steps and thought it was some kind of animal. When out of the corner of my eye I perceived a movement on my left hand side. I turned my head and what I saw was not a cow or a lamb. My mind did not yet know what to think. A ear boy with a costume? But, at this hour, a midget. Yes, it was a midget, with a mask scaring the people going by. A midget? No, it can't yet be, I thought to myself. It RTMS head, those eyes, no even the mouth, nothing was. Ayo, go away. I told myself. It was something like a bizarre little man running beside my car. End of this extract and back to the book of Alec. One Monday in mid-February 1989, Alec Newald set off on what should have been a 3-hour drive from Rotorua to Auckland, in New Zealand. He arrived in Auckland feeling tired and confused, but was even more confused to learn that Monday was now Thursday 10 days later, and that he had no idea of what had happened in the meantime. When Alec did retrieve his memories of those missing 10 days, he realized his life had changed forever. Early on in that fateful trip, while driving through a foggy mountain pass, Alec was whisked from the road by beings from an extraterrestrial civilization. What he learned and experienced during his stay with these friendly beings has profound implications for all of us here on Earth. Soon after his AOR returno, Alec received strange visits from AOR government scientists wanting to know about his experience. Among other things, they were keen to learn what he had noticed about the capabilities of this alien race. Alec was uncooperative and soon found himself in a hot water. It was obvious that these AOR scientists knew all about Alec TMS abductor TM and expected they would return to Earth one day, soon. Through Alec TMS experiences he has written a book called Co-Evolution, which is what the following information will be drawn from. Of course it is quite impossible to relay to you all the entire contents of the book itself, so I will be focusing on some of the events that transpired during his abduction and a little of what happened on his return. Alec and the book he wrote after his paranormal experience. Introduction. The hidden reality. There is much about this planet TMS history that has never been told. I do not speak here of yet to be discovered historical facts, but only of material that is already known by a select few within our communities. Most of this knowledge has been carried through the ages and jealously guarded by the few secret sects that were privy to it from its TMS inception, but these sects were not necessarily a secret to at the time this information was first placed in their trust. The original intention was that this ancient knowledge would be shared with this planet TMS inheritors, en masse, when the trust holders deemed it appropriate. The species slated for inheritance of this knowledge is known as Homo sapiens. For your information, Homo sapiens and the Cro-Magnon precursor species were artificially engineered. The final pieces of the GRO, Magnon jigsaw puzzle were put together approximately 70,000 years ago. This was not the first humanoid creature to walk planet Earth, but it was the first type ever to be constructed to act as a receiver or container so that a second abodilosaur entity could cohabit with this humanoid form to experience physicality through the actions of its RTMS hosta TMS solid outer body form. You may recognize this entity if I refer to it as the soul or spirit. The new species was designed to be able to take on board all the stored information that awaited it at any time in the future. In other words, it was already fully developed in its RTMS mental capabilities and required no further improvements or evolutionary developments at that point. All the knowledge that would ever be needed by this race, up until its RTMS next evolutionary step, was already present on the planet and in the safekeeping of the trustees. These trust holders have long since broken their vows to the givers of the knowledge, and I think that until very recently they had even forgotten the identity of their ancient benefactors. Perhaps a day of reckoning is close at hand for the trustees. It may now be a little clearer to you as to why the secret sects or governors of our planet would prefer that the anticipated visit from the AO Landlader did not take place. From here on in, I will be focusing on some of Alec TMS drawings that he made upon his return, and giving a brief summary of each one. Alec TMS experience is one of the most documented and intriguing cases in UFO abductions that he had come across. The knowledge he gained from the experience is beyond any price on Earth. Below are actual quotes from Alec TMS book Co. Evolution, headline. Meeting the Guardian. Looking up, I realized we were being approached by three aliens, the tallest of them looking like my female escort from earlier on. The second one was just a little shorter and was male as far as I could tell. The third was smaller, much smaller, and walked ahead of the other two. He, for want of a better word, was slightly built with a roundish head and rather unusual, squinty eyes which were well spaced and placed rather lower down than our own. He had a very small mouth, but I did not notice any ears or much of a nose. His physical appearance, however, was of almost no consequence, for I was immediately struck with an almost overpowering feeling of his presence. I cannot say it was hypnotic, if anything, the opposite. It was as if his energy was being projected and absorbed by my body. There is no way I could ever adequately describe this sensation to you, using mere words. Those who have had this experience will know just what I mean. His communication with me was also much stronger and clearer than I had experienced with any of the others. This was still not the alien I had read about or seen graphically illustrated in various magazines or papers. The size was about right, 4 feet in height with a slight frame. "Welcome," he said. "I am the designated guardian of this section. Anything that you feel you might need to make your stay with us more pleasant, ask and I shall do my best to supply it. The suit you have been given will make it possible for you to understand us, and us you." He must have read my mind as he entered the room, for I had just asked about the suits. "We do not speak as such, as you will have noticed by now. Sometimes a verbal sound message is necessary in long distance. I will not inquire if you wish to stay or return at this time. I would hope you may desire the chance to absorb more knowledge and understanding before you make that decision. There are things we cannot tell you at this point in time. You will understand, I hope. Nevertheless, you will have the chance to acquire some considerable knowledge on a wide variety of subjects, including your own kind, before you make up your mind upon this. However, some or all of this knowledge may have to be removed from you, should you decide to leave us and return to your own planet." Headline. The arrival. The first most striking thing about the city was its RTMS neatness and order, the second, its RTMS immensity. Even from well up I could not make out the boundaries. There may well be bigger cities on Earth, but where I come from this place would be rated big, very big. It stretched out in both directions, following the coastline out of my line of sight. There seemed to be only a thin strip of land that was not coastline or desert, and the city was sandwiched within it. As we dropped in altitude, the sea lost its RTMS bluish look and turned almost black. There could not have been much wind as it looked very glass-like. I could make out a dark outline not too far off the coast, which presumably was a deep drop off from the coastal shallows. The last thing really to make an impact upon me was the lack of tall buildings, save for the odd tower or two, and the dominance of a small circular shapes among a few larger pyramid-shaped constructions. Hardly more than a minute had passed since we had entered the atmosphere, but now the craft had already settled. There was a mixture of apprehension and excitement within me. Now that I was here, wherever here was, just what had happened to me really started to sink in. Would I ever see home again? Was anyone looking for me? My panic soon eased, however, and curiosity won the day. I eagerly scanned the viewer for my first close look at the alien landscape. What I could see was an area of leveled ground, similar to a courtyard, leading to two pyramid-shaped buildings. They appeared to be made from a material that looked just like tinted glass or semi-transparent plastic. I couldn't quite see the apex of these buildings from my vantage point, but later I was to find that they were capped with a spiral tower or antenna arrangement. The height of the tower added approximately 25% to the building's overall height. Each building in turn was topped with what I can only describe as a large light bulb. As peculiar as it may sound, I was sure I had seen something like this before, in the distant past. These bulbs glowed day and night, and upon closer inspection appeared to be of a net or mesh construction rather than being glass spheres. There appeared to be some form of electromagnetic grid or shielding device above the actual landing site, possibly a force field or energy gathering device. There was a short walk to one of the large structures which I had seen from inside the craft. The air was still and amazingly quiet. Indeed, it was not until I had stepped out of the transporter that I realized there must have been some sort of background noise on board, although IATMD not noticed it at the time. The surface upon which I was walking was not unlike cork. It appeared to be porous and slightly yielding underfoot. Headline: The Dwellings. I was at a loss as to which way to look for a while, such was my curiosity and awe at what was around me. Some buildings resembled those on Earth, but the outer walls were sloped back at approximately 30-degree angles and set back some distance at each floor level, making them look more like steps up a hill. Most of the buildings were circular or tube-like in shape. They were laid out in a spiral pattern with the tallest buildings in the center, but the heights became progressively lower as the buildings spiraled out. All the buildings appeared to be made of glass or plastic. Access to the upper levels of the home I was staying was by way of a gentle sloping spiral ramp which skirted the curved perimeters of the walls. This ramp could also be seen from the outside of the building. My personal observation of this feature is that it could have been a form or frame or reinforcement for the dwelling. The rooms, or, rather, the various levels, were lit by some form of diffused lighting, both day and night. But I could find no direct source to explain this light. As we reached the second level, their main living area, I was stunned by the beauty and layout. No matter how hard I try here, my description cannot do it justice. The color was predominantly pearl white with perhaps a touch of silver gray within. This may have helped remove any glare, for I can assure you there was none. Reflected from even deeper within were all the colors of the rainbow, not unlike a mother-of-pearl seashell. The soft light I mentioned earlier appeared to radiate from everywhere. To say it was a truly amazing sight is grossly inadequate. Variant of dwelling or house, also three-story high, hexagonal crystalline pattern within walls. IATMM not even sure if it was the color that was the most stunning aspect of the interior, for I was equally smitten with the molded flow of form from one section, shape or partition into the next. It was as if the whole dwelling, including every item of furniture, had been constructed simultaneously. Again, there appeared to be no joints or seams that I could distinguish. However, this dwelling had been constructed. Similar techniques to those used in the transporter must have been employed. The floor, a smooth, padded rubber, was soft to walk on, the color, just one or two shades darker than the walls. The furniture looked to be made from the now quite familiar glass or plastic substance. Although it was slightly tinted or smoky, all the colors of the rainbow seemed to be deep within it.